Hello, and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are feeling very spooky today. Anyways, we are your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. And we are joined by a very special guest today. She's actually not spooky. She's amazing. she perhaps might have been the person that created the best info governance workflow and group that I've ever seen in our industry. So I'm really excited to introduce you to her, or Angie will introduce you to her here in a moment. I want to just announce that this will be the end of our EDRM series. So this is our final piece of that series that we've been doing all year.
That's spooky.
That is. Well, it's actually what's really spooky is we have over 5,000 downloads of this podcast. So we're able to announce that on social media. All those 5,000 downloads have taken place all over the world. I mean, it's been incredible to see all of the flock that we have out there in the different countries and locations. We really appreciate everyone who has been following us. So before I go on any further, Angie, I feel like our guest of honor needs to be introduced.
Oh, yes. We must celebrate the one, the only, Linda Lupercio. Now, before I introduce her formally, I have to say that the views that are expressed on this podcast today are the speaker's own views and don't necessarily represent the views of our employers, partners, clients, or organizations or affiliates. So without further ado, Linda, welcome. Linda is the Assistant Vice President of Information Governance, eDiscovery, and Legal Operations at the Hanover Group. And we are so, so, so thrilled to have you on the podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you. I am very excited to be here. I have always decided and thought about it a long time. And when I get invited to go to eDiscovery Chicks, I know that I've really accomplished something. So when I got the invitation, I was like, oh, finally.
So meanwhile, we've been fangirling over you.
Yes. I talk about you every chance I get. So we are so honored and thrilled that you're here. For those of you who can't see us, because, you know, we really just release our audio, not our video, I will tell you that these girls and I have a little bit of a Halloween outfit vibe going today. Linda is sporting a witch hat, and Angie, I don't really know what's going on with your hair, I'm going to pop a photo and I will share it with you guys online so you can see, but I need to let you know that both Linda and Angie have the most fab nails I have ever seen. So before we even started, I was like, I need to know all about your nails.
We have priorities, okay?
Exactly. So we're kind of sporting the Halloween mood today. And I was curious, as we get into Halloween, I immediately start thinking about all the thriller movies, slasher films. What do you guys think of when you think of Halloween and movies? Do you have a favorite?
I definitely do. All of the Halloween series are my favorite, but you should know that I watch them with my hands over my ears and with a blanket in front of me, because as soon as it gets really scary, I have to hide.
Oh man, you're braver than I am.
Oh, I can't. Yeah, you are much braver than I am as well. I cannot do scary movies. I am the biggest wimp when it comes to that. And so here's my favorite Halloween movie. Harry Potter 1. Let me defend that before the scene with the troll where Quirrell comes running in. He's like, troll in the dungeon. That is at the Halloween feast. Therefore, I think it is a Halloween movie.
Yeah.
You can come at me. I get it. It's a controversial opinion.
My favorite Halloween movie is probably even more of a further fetch than yours is, because mine is Meet Me in St. Louis.
Okay, what?
No, I do not like scary movies at all, because I have vivid dreams. Like every night I have lots of dreams and I do not need to feed ideas to myself. So, but I will say that Meet Me in St. Louis, the opening scene is Halloween, because Judy Garland's character is the sister, and the younger sister Trudy is going out to celebrate Halloween, and they're burning all this furniture and stuff in the street, which is, I thought as a kid, was amazing. I'm like, I want to burn all of our furniture in the street. So I say that it's Halloween, but it really is more of a Christmas movie because it ends in Christmas. But anyway, that's what I usually watch around this time of year. So maybe I'm a dork.
I also think that Harry Potter 1 is also a Christmas movie. So this is just a multi-holiday movie.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Linda is the most legit person on this. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going real.
Bree and I are just a bunch of weenies.
Yeah. I can't take it. I mean, we'll talk about Christmas movies, and I got about 20 of those.
Then we can talk about Die Hard.
Yeah, and I like that as a Christmas movie as well. In fact, we introduced that to my son last season, and he's like, oh, where's this been? I like this Christmas movie. I'm like, well, all right.
Okay. Maybe. I'm having a very honest debate right now about when I can introduce the old Star Wars movies to my child. Asking for a friend here, what age do you think it would be appropriate to show a child those movies? The old ones.
I mean, with the Ewoks and everything, I don't know that there's anything that scary about that. I think 5.
So my daughter's 3.
Oh, I mean, okay.
I would say like 4 or 5 is okay. I mean, 3 might be okay depending on the kid.
Yeah.
My kid's not really scared of scary. He thinks it's hilarious that I freak out at scary movies. He's pretty thick skinned. I don't know. I think they're probably okay. I mean, what's racy about Star Wars?
Yeah, there's nothing. Nothing. And if she gets scared, just shut it down.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you for the votes of confidence.
Princess Leia's in there. Like, put her hair up and ponytail or pigtail.
Yeah, she needs a strong female figure role model. So, okay, cool.
We'll carry on this Halloween theme here a little bit in our conversation today. But we brought Linda on here so we could all be the recipients of all of her wisdom as it pertains to info governance and data governance, for that matter. So here's a question I have for you, Linda. We are going to walk into the information governance. We'll call it a haunted house. And we want to start by defining these two key terms, information governance and data governance. What do these terms mean? And what's the difference between the two?
First of all, you've got to really picture yourself in the haunted house. So information governance is the house. It's the top. It's the whole house, the frame, everything. Data governance is one of the rooms. So when you walk into the data governance room, the purpose of the room is to make sure that the guidelines around managing data integrity, third-party data, data models, data lineage, creating consistent data naming convention. That's your data governance. When you're looking at another room, my haunted house, it would be e-discovery. So I would think your organization has been asked to produce data, and you need to know where it is. Where does it live? E-discovery is very costly and can involve significant fines and sanctions if you can't be responsive and be transparent. That room needs to be organized and ready at a moment's notice because you don't know when that call is going to come in. Now, you also need a room for privacy. The purpose of privacy is to ensure that there are guidelines related to sensitive and personally identifiable information, the PII. You have to have that in place. That protects the company. Let's face it, data is one of your most critical assets for a company. That has to have a security system. Well, I see the security system as information security. So that makes sure that all of your data is protected. All the company's most important, one of the company's most important assets is protected. Most important asset is employees. But after that, it's data. And information governance is the house that houses it all.
I love that analogy. This is also inspiring me to go and clean my pantry so that I don't keep buying the same things over and over again. But to your point, to kind of bring it back to what we're actually talking about here, it's sort of the same thing with e-discovery and stuff, right? If you've just got kind of a jumble of data and it's unorganized, how are you going to know what lives where, what you can get rid of, what's expired, what you should use this week, right? So you've got to keep that organization top of mind.
Exactly.
I want to ask you a little bit about the benefits of creating a robust information governance system. And there's this New York Times bestselling author that I love named Simon Sinek, and he wrote a book called Start With Why. One of the book's big messages is, as the title suggests, finding out what your why is, because that's key to motivation and also to your success. And so, I mean, no one's going to lift a finger or marshal any resources for a project if they don't understand why it's important, right? You've got to justify your why in every business decision. Why is information governance important? Why should organizations invest all this time and effort into building out a really robust system?
So information governance is the foundation of any organization. It's the building blocks. You have to have it. You have to know your data. You have to understand. And knowing where it exists, if you don't, you're going to leave gaping holes in that foundation, in your data landscape. It's critical that you know where the data is, whether it be an e-discovery, whether it be you want to clean out data, whether it be data could be obsolete. You have to know where to find it.
I'm sitting here thinking that all sounds very reasonable, Linda, but that also I know better and I know that it's going to be very hard. It's going to be very hard and involve a lot of people, a lot of time, potentially years, a lot of money, and we're all going to have to work together and we don't really like doing that all the time. What happens if I just blow it off? Like, how important is this?
You could blow it off. And a lot of companies do that. A lot of companies say, I'll deal with it when I have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, if you've got petabytes of data, when you have to do it, you're not going to be able to do it quick enough. You're not going to be able to do it effectively enough. And it's very, very expensive for you to have an e-discovery solution, or you're going to have to bring it out outside, right? So it could be millions of dollars. It could be sanctions. But the other thing is, it's a strategic advantage. Knowing where your data is allows you to be ahead of the rest. It allows you to be ahead of whoever's coming after that data. And that's critical. Yeah.
That's a really great perspective. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice for companies who are thinking, that's all great. And I know Linda's right, but I just don't even, that's overwhelming. I don't even know where to start. What would you say is a good place if you could only do a small amount? Where would be a good place to start?
So I would say, first of all, I would tell you that I'm very jealous and I wish I was in that boat because I miss doing that stuff. Like, I think that is the most fun and the most rewarding when you have nothing and you're putting a program in place. So I'm jealous.
So but secondly, I'm hearing that they should call you.
They should call me. I'll fix it. It's fine. But what you've got to think about is, first of all, you've got to know your world, right? You can't just walk in and say, I'm going to put a program in place. You have to listen to the people in the business unit. You have to listen to the need, and you never take on the whole thing. You always want to start with something small. So, when I'm over in this unit, they're complaining that they have performance issues because they have too much data here. Hey, let's look into that. Let's figure out what's going on. Let's decide how we can help with that. The other thing you really want to start with, get yourself a team. Get someone who knows what they're doing, knows they've done it before, knows how to help you, and then only do little pieces so you can show wins. Because you really want those wins.
Only one way to eat an elephant, right?
Yeah, one bite at a time.
One bite at a time. I want to come back to something that you mentioned, which is that having a robust information governance system can be a strategic advantage. And I know I've come across situations where it's like, no, we need to be proactive about this because if we get hit with something that affects our data, we get a data breach, we get sued.
Yep.
That's a massive hit. And so, but the flip side of that is you can use this to your advantage. So can you talk to our listeners about how they can use information governance as a strategic advantage while litigating?
Absolutely. So when you're litigating, the first thing you're going to need to do is find that data, right? Now you've had a request and you have to figure out what to give them. If you don't have something in place, how are you going to know where your data is? Like, you have to know where it is. So if I were hit with an e-discovery, I would say, all right, so it's this business unit. Go into our data inventory, our data catalog, and say, all right, what applications are in there? What data sources? What kind of data? Maybe it's unstructured, structured. What's there? And already, I'm already starting to build my response. Whereas other companies could be, if they're not prepared, you could be in a point where you're like, I don't know, I've got to go look. Let me talk to IT. Let me see who I would talk to. I have data owners in every single business unit. I know who to ask. And they really are the people that know everything.
And that's amazing. It's so time consuming just to find your data, just to find the people who know where the data might be.
Right. Exactly.
And then what to figure out what's in it. Let's talk about what you mentioned earlier, Linda, your true passion, which is building that information governance system from the ground up. I know that's on your heart and that's what you feel super passionate about. And it shows in your great success that you've had in building a successful program. So when we've talked to you in the past, we know that there are some key components that should exist that you feel like have led you to success. Can you share with us what some of those components are?
So the first thing you need is executive sponsorship. If everyone is saying no, 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 you are not going to be able to make a program successful. If you have executive sponsorship, and I've always been very blessed, both of my general counsels were very, very supportive of my program. You need that. You need a powerful and cohesive team. I can't emphasize it enough. My team is the reason we are successful. They bring each of their strengths and each of their pieces of knowledge, and they bring it together when we're solving problems. I never walk out of my office and look at my team, they're right outside my office, that they're not collaborating or discussing or pointing to a screen together. That's important. You need that in order to build a program and to solve all the problems that are going to come with it, because they will. You need strong partnerships throughout the company. We did lunch and learns. We did walkthroughs. We had, at one point when there was training, we had them come into a room and we did training all together so we could explain what people were being trained on in case they had questions. It's knowing your data. It's deciding that you really have to put in the time and the commitment and the people to understand all about your data. And then going to the different business units and saying, what would you need to know? What would you be asking me so I can make sure I have those things in advance? And now they come and they can say, hey, I need to know how much PII is in an application, and I can give them an answer. Mm-hmm. So it's not only thinking of your initiatives, but theirs. And then there's training. You really need a good training program. And you need, back to the executive sponsorship, to have people buy in. We've been very lucky. We've had about a 98% success rate on our training.
Wow.
And as someone comes in, they're required to take our training. So You don't wonder if you're losing people on the way in. You're not, because they have to take it. And then the last thing are the right tools. You need to know what tools you need. You have to figure out what works for you. I'm very, very big on a single platform. I think that's important. I don't want to go here for this and there for that. So having it all together and then putting it together in a package and building a program.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting many people on your team. And I see, number one, how knowledgeable they are, how also fun they are. They love their job. They love working together and with you. And I think it's really cool what you shared with me, that you actually did something. I mean, it's not only cool, but I think it's very smart. You hired people on your team who actually worked in IT. They were the subject matter experts in their own kind of industry or field, and you brought them in to be part of your team. And it's almost, I mean, I look at that and I'm like, geez, a genius, because you knew that they're going to have to work with those teams, and there was no better person to be a representative than somebody who had the relationships there in place and had that knowledge there. So I think that was such a genius move on your part. And I actually have shared that a couple of times as I've spoken on info governance. And I'm like, this is not my idea. This is Linda. But I think that that's great. But I had a question for you about training, because this is something that comes up quite a bit, is how often do you feel like people need to have that training reinforced so that they remember that initial training that they had when they started at the company and it's been a couple of years or whatever? How often do they need like a refresher?
So we do training. We require training every 2 years, but the alternate year we do what's called an information governance roadshow. So we get together, we partner with information security and privacy, and we all three do a deck. And then we meet with all of the business record custodians and the business record stewards. It is a required meeting. And we all get together. We have four or five of them we offer. And we each have like 15, 20 minutes, and then 15 minutes for questions. And we go through where our program is, what key things you need to know, what's changed since the last time, reminders on privacy, reminders on e-discovery, reminders on information governance. And then security also has their piece and they talk about it. So they're not getting an official training, but they are getting training.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's great that you all are collaborating together.
Yeah. Linda, I want to come back to something that you mentioned as a key component to creating a successful information governance system, and that is knowing your data. And, you know, in this podcast and elsewhere, you know, you've said things along the lines of you have to listen to your data, and the more we learn about our data, the more effective we become. What data are you listening to, and how are you listening to it?
So every piece of data in the company is what you need to listen to. As data comes in an application, we actually go into the application, we have a tool, and we look at how many lines there are, how many rows, how much PII there is, what kind of PII, what's the tool used for, what's the application used for, who are the people that are using this application? Do they still need it? Is there another place to get it? So we have probably about 60 questions that we ask on every data source. And they're questions that people have come to us and said, you know, it'd be really helpful to me is if, like, business continuity, if I knew, like, how often people go into a data, if I knew how much PII there was. InfoSec came to us and said, we need to know where data flows into and out of. So we put that in. So we have everything about that data. And to me, that's data speaking to you. When I look at that, I can understand what that data is saying. Hey, I work in 6 other applications. Hey, I work with all these different business units. That's your data speaking.
And it's telling you how important it is, who interacts with it, when you might need it. That's exactly. Brilliant.
And maybe you've already answered this a little bit, Linda, but when we're talking about listening to all of our data, I hear that and I'm like, good grief. Do you know how much data is on an organization? I mean, there's data everywhere. There's HR records, there's payroll records, there's data that we have with our clients, there's data that we have in sales, there's marketing data, there's legal data, there's all kinds. What do you mean? I need to know every aspect. So I guess, can you break down for us which aspects of our data are the most important to understand and why?
So there's 2 sides of our tool, right? So we have structured, which is all of your applications, all of your data sources, your servers, all that kind of stuff. And then there's unstructured. Those are your documents in a file share or a team site or a generic mailbox. So I won't say that one is more important than the other. How I've managed to the right side, for me anyway, the unstructured side, is to put set retentions in place. So I know about the data. I have a non-custodial data steward for every one of them, but we have to put a limit. We have to put an end date on each of those data because it's not permanent data. That's data that's more transient because it's part of what you use today. Do I really need it in 10, 15 years? I probably don't. And then the other side are applications. And that's data that is, that's the company's lifeblood. That's where everything is happening. Everything is being documented. It's your history. So that side is important as well, but it's understanding the differences and trying to manage both sides. Now, we have retentions on the structured data, but the retentions are very business need focused. We always make the regulations, of course, but then it's business need focused, whereas the other side is, hey, email only stays for a certain period of time. We can't keep it forever. It's not your file cabinet.
Yeah. That's a hard.
It's not
hard
your battle. File cabinet.
Oh my goodness. Well, so I was talking a moment ago about your team and how wonderful they are. And I think that a lot of times when people hear the words info governance or data governance, they immediately start thinking, oh, well, that's a legal function or that's a compliance function. You know, and I know from watching the success of your team, that is not necessarily at all true. So why don't you talk to us about that? When you're building an info governance practice, who are those stakeholders and who do you think should have visibility into that build out?
Well, part of it is, what will your information governance program encompass? Will it include e-discovery? Because if so, now you need someone that can collect. I have a forensic engineer who's amazing. And then it's your e-discovery analysts who review. I have 2 of those, well, 3 of those. One that does legal holds and 2 that really review. So it depends on what you're looking for a program. So I can say what I have, but you may not have an e-discovery component. And if that's the case, you don't need it. You definitely need project managers. I have two incredibly strong information governance project managers. I also have another project manager who doesn't think she's information governance, but I keep stealing her over, so she kind of is.
they call that adverse possession.
Could be that. And then I have I have e-discovery specialists or coordinators or analysts. And I have one in particular that's been with the company, I don't know, 30 years. And she is just, she knows everything. So I laugh when they come to me because I'm going to go, okay, let me go talk to Nicole. And she has all the history and she tracks everything. And when you finish something, you hand it to Nicole and she puts it away because you know when you ask her for it, she's going to go, it's already in your inbox. So you definitely want her to have everything. And then I have a second person who's really in charge of the matter management side of the information governance. So, and she's brutal. Did you finish this on time? Your deadline's this week. Has it been done? What's your update? Have you put an update in there? So she keeps everything current. And they're terrified of her. She keeps everything current because, and that's important because when we're looking at, you know, 23, 25 projects, we have to know where they stand. Mm-hmm. And she's got it down to a science. And then I have, well, for eDiscovery, I have my forensic engineer. I have my data inventory person, and he's my team lead. And he actually, his job is to keep the data inventory up to date, the data catalog up to date. So he interacts with all the business units. We do an annual certification, at least annual certification. He takes that information. If there's differences, he meets with the people. So our data is always fresh. It's always up to date. And we also have a data, what do we call him? I think he's a data reduction team lead. And his job is to analyze the data, and he does it super well. So he'll look at something, get all his magical tools, and then he'll come out and say, so what you want to know is this, this, this. Or
his magical tools.
Did you know this? No, I did not know this. But thank you. So there's all kind of, he goes through and decides what could possibly be deleted, what seems to be past retention, or provides information to the data inventory person so that data inventory person can update their information. So we have it all going on. And then we have another project manager, and he flits between them all because we all want him. So we steal him for a little while, and another one steals him for a little while. In fact, today I turned to him in a meeting, and he went, oh, no. I was like, come on, you're the perfect person.
I feel like we can have an individual podcast episode with each of these people to like break down
every one of their functions. They're awesome.
It's so funny.
So if I was trying to build a system out and I just wanted like a list of who are the stakeholders that I should make sure to hit and make sure to include in the discussion, what are your like top 5-7 stakeholder groups?
So I definitely would have a relationship. Well, you've got to have the GC's support. You just definitely need it. You need your technology group support. I work very closely when I can get him with the head of infrastructure to make sure that I understand where he's going and he understands where I'm going so that we're connected. And the big thing in an information governance program is connection. It's that collaboration. It's that understanding your people. We have two people in HTG. One I go to all the time when I have a problem. I'm sure she loves that. And the other I go to all the time when I just need information. Between them all, I probably work with our technology group at least daily on something or another. And my, as you said, my team is very connected because that's where they came from. So they can call someone and say, hey, what did one of them say the other day? I mean, it wasn't even words. I don't even know what this language is. Something about, I don't know, talk to Paul. He knows Kubernetes. I'm like, who says that? Like, what is that?
That's hilarious. Okay, so we've got our GC. We've got our technology folks. Who else do we need to bring to this haunted dinner party?
You need people that are in the business. So every business unit we have has a business record steward and a business record coordinator. A steward's probably at a VP level, and a coordinator is the person that really helps the steward to get the information they need. We have that in 44 different business units, and you need that. And when we get together, if we need something from a certain business unit, I know right where to go. when Privacy came to us and said, hey, we need to kind of figure out what, how to grow our program or how to get this in place, I immediately offered them my custodian and steward list, my coordinator and steward list, because that's a great place to start. They may not be the right people, but they're going to know the right people. The other thing you want to do is look at units throughout the company that need the same things you need. So business continuity is a good place. InfoSec is a good place. Privacy is a good place. Because if you can build those relationships, you're finishing your house.
Engineering. You need an engineer. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. We just recently got a new data governance person. And I immediately reached out and was like, okay, so we need to connect. We need to talk about what you're going to do versus what I'm going to do. I met with InfoSec, information security, this last week to say, let's talk about policies. And it turned out he ended up adopting one of our policies. Like, we just have to work together. It's critical. Mm-hmm. And more hands, less work. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So are any of these stakeholders often overlooked? And if so, why do you think that is?
I think the business record owner is overlooked. Mm. I don't know that they're overlooked or that they truly think about or need to think about all of the details of it. Like, they're the people you want to go to when you want to know why a system was built or what a system is for. But do they really need the day-to-day, gee, I think this is this big and should be that big? Like, that's not their focus. And it's scary deleting data, right? I know what I'm asking people to do. That's why I try to be right by their side. Here's what I can tell you. This. Do you need this data? If you tell me you need it for a business reason, I'm not going to delete it. But mm-hmm. if you tell me you don't, I am. And then once I do, is it anywhere else? Because I don't want to get rid of the easy place to go and then have to go to the difficult place to go to get it back.
So you hit on this a minute ago. You mentioned different policies that are involved. And I know just from my own experience how many policies there are. And depending on what the department is, there how many other brands and flavors and sub-policies and the policies for the policies and all those kinds of things. But as you're putting together an information governance program, what policies do you think stand out to you as being the most important to have in place that support that? And which ones should be the highest priority?
So I think the highest priority for an information governance program should be your information governance policy. Your second is your data destruction policy. Your first one being what kinds of data, transient business records, data sources, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to handle it? Does it need confidential treatment? If so, how do you do it? It includes your data-related roles, such as business stewards and business coordinators, technical owners, non-custodial data stewards. And then you've got to keep in mind on the side of your desk, don't forget about e-discovery and legal holds, because those people need to be included. You can't delete, and so you've got to sign off. You absolutely mm-hmm. need to know they don't need that data. And then understanding your record storage and disposal is critical. How are you getting rid of it? Are you following NIST guidelines? Are you making sure that it's gone in all places? Getting, like I just said a second ago, getting rid of it here, but knowing you need to get it over the hill is not helping anyone. And then understanding how you get rid of it. What is the expectation? How quickly? Before you hit the button, have you checked again that you don't have a legal hold? And then lastly, it's policy exceptions, because you're going to have them. So let's document them. Let's document a process. So when that exception hits, everyone knows what they need to do.
Brilliant. Linda, in the information governance policy, like you mentioned that you would expect it to address the different kinds of data you might see, the transient data, business records, data sources. What else might you expect to see in an information governance policy?
I would expect to see how the data should be handled. I would expect to see the roles. So I am a data steward. What are my responsibilities? I'm a business records steward. What are the responsibilities? I'm going to hit into requests for deletion. What's the process? What's my part in that? What's the process I need to follow? I am a non-custodial data steward. What do I need to do when you say, let's delete? Do I need to think about legal holds? Are they thought about somewhere else? Who owns the responsibilities?
Great. And so when an organization is developing an information governance policy, I mean, how should they be thinking about that? I mean, I know we talked about earlier, like only one way to eat an elephant. Don't try to do everything. Just do, you know, the one thing that you can do right now. Does that logic apply to creating an information governance policy? And if so, why?
Absolutely. The one thing, remember, you can always build a policy 5 times. You can revise a policy 10 times in a year if your process has changed. What you don't want to do is build a program and build a policy that isn't compliant right off the bat. So I'm going to do all these great things, but I haven't. You don't want that to be your policy. You want your policy to display what you are doing.
I don't know if anybody remembers back at the very beginning of our EDRM series this year, we had a judge guest, and it was funny because I initially wanted her to talk about legal holds gone wrong. And she's like, well, there's not really a legal holds gone wrong. There's a preservation gone wrong. And usually it's because somebody didn't follow their policy. And so that's exactly what you're kind of tapping into here, which is hilarious that we're now taking this full circle back to the very beginning of the EDRM model. If we're not following those policies, then we've kind of blown our whole e-discovery plan out of the water.
I mean, that's why we did this last.
Exactly. It's almost like we thought about this.
It's almost like we planned for it. Wild.
Well, we also did not know that Linda was going to be like the cherry on top of the dessert. So it's like we saved the best for last. I mean,
Linda's our caviar.
I don't know.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about training earlier and how often people should be trained and that sort of thing. What do you think is important for us to remember that should be included within that training? And how do we get people to follow what we're trying to train them on?
Okay. So I think a couple things. So one, you don't want it to be too long. You're going to lose their attention. You don't want it to be too short so you don't get your points across. You want to ensure they're exposed to the information governance policy and process and the program. We have a website that has everything on there. Now, I would not think in a million years a new employee is going to go into all of it. So I'm going to showcase a few pieces of it to get their attention. And I'm going to ask them questions about it. Not hard questions, just questions to get their attention. And then when we do a business steward and a coordinator, we also, in our roadshow, we also partner with the different areas, as I said, but we take the time to really go through and make sure they're trained. So our business record stewards, our business record coordinators have to sign annually that they've done a certification. You would never ask someone to drive a hearse and not tell them how.
I mean, you could. It'd just be a terrible idea.
Yeah. And I mean, you're not going to kill someone, right?
No, there's already someone dead in the back of your hearse, probably.
But anyway, so to give them an understanding of what their responsibilities are, you never want someone surprised and go, oh, that was me. Like, you want to make sure that they've had an opportunity and they sign off on that every single year. They know what their responsibilities are and they've agreed to them. And now you can go on and they can do them.
So you don't want to have them go, oh, this is me. You want them to go, oh, that was me.
Me.
Yeah. You want to shame them, not surprise them.
Oh, my.
That's what I'm hearing.
Exactly.
Well, let's move along from dead bodies and scaring people. So say I wanted to build, I want to talk about tools now. So say I wanted to build an information governance system, InfoGov. I can't say information governance, too many syllables. An InfoGov system at my organization. What tools would you recommend I look into? And I'm not talking like specific vendors here, but what capabilities would you look for when you're evaluating tools?
Well, the biggest tool you're going to have is going to be your relationship with your business units. I know it's not an actual technical tool, but that is absolutely key. You have to have that relationship. You have to connect. You want to connect the other rooms of the house. It's all about collaboration. Our program is so, so focused on collaborating. If someone calls us, even if we don't have time for whatever they ask for, we do it and we try to help them because we know someday I'm going to call them and go, hey, guess what? I need help. And I want to be able to them to understand, first of all, who we are and know that they have to kind of help us a little bit. But I guess when I'm looking at the tool, if I look at my tools, the big thing I wanted was I really wanted tools that were going to be on the same platform. I wanted like a 360 view. I didn't want to have to go here to look at this and there to look at that. And when I update this, do I need to update that? I wanted it all holistic. So I would say whatever tool you pick, make sure it has everything you need. If you're doing e-discovery, make sure you have your legal hold and your searching and your manage review, and make sure you have your inventory and your retention together. Make sure all the pieces, and if you're responsible for privacy, make sure you've got something for DSARs, making sure a data subject access reports. Make sure you have all the things you're going to need in that tool. You don't have to buy them all. We didn't buy everything at once, but at least you know when I'm ready, I can go and pick that up. Because otherwise, trying to piece them together is just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I totally agree with you on that. And so one follow-up question I have on something that you just said in regards to the rooms in our haunted house. What happens when they don't want to talk to each other? The ghosts in the rooms don't want to get along. They don't want to, they're hesitant to become involved with your team, and they just kind of want to stick to their own silo. How do you encourage that collaboration?
Well, we've hit it. We've certainly hit that. I think what saves you is over time, they're going to need you. If you're gathering all this information, they're going to have to knock at your door.
Yeah.
And I usually, if they knock at my door, I'm very clear that this is a two-way knock. So I'm happy to help you. It is my pleasure. Mm-hmm. It'll be great that we're now going to be working together collaboratively. So the next time I call, no one's shocked.
Like it or not.
I love this two-way street we are paving together. Thank you so much.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that is said. I mean, I love that you said that that was the most important tool, but I think in the flip side, it is one of the biggest hurdles that people face in organizations today and want to know how to solve for. All right. So the second part of what you're talking about is buying a tool that, or having a tool that's holistic in terms of the entire platform. But you mentioned that you didn't buy it all up front. You just knew it was available for you whenever you were ready for it. So can you talk to us about how you prioritized what you bought when, and how you suggest people to look at that? Because tools are expensive and the economy is terrible, Linda.
I totally agree. And so first of all, you will get the most attention and the most support when there's a fire burning. So take advantage. So
or light it yourself.
Burning, well,
let's go rogue. I'm kidding. It felt Halloween-y. It felt on theme. I don't know.
But definitely. So you have a big e-discovery. You have a big data issue. You might have a market conduct or a financial exam. Take advantage. Like, I'm not saying don't help, do whatever you can, but make it clear that by not having the tool, this is much more difficult and much more risky. Yeah. So when it's over, or sometimes even during, people are, you know, okay, well, all right, go tell me what you can find. Tell me what it looks like, what it would look like if I had that tool. Absolutely. I'm happy to. So we started our journey with Legal Hold, because that was something we didn't have and we really needed to have. It was very rudimentary. It was very, oh my God, it was so basic. But then, and also, I guess if there's anything I can say, work with a vendor that is going to build with you. So make sure your vendor isn't just saying, here, I'm doing this and I'm not going any further, because that's not the vendor you want, because you are going to grow and you want them to grow with you. It was something I was very careful with. I wanted to understand what their strategic view was, because if they didn't have the same strategic view as me, they weren't the right vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And then grow it, focus on where you need to be, and focus on where you can showcase what you've accomplished. So if you go in and you save 40 terabytes, I know that sounds like a lot, but in the real world, it's really not. And you can say to them, hey, I saved 40 terabytes, and terabytes cost about $3,000 a year. So in 3 years, I've saved, and you go through it and they see the value. Mm-hmm. We built an access database so that we could show the value we save on each e-discovery. And I've showcased that several times in the different shows, different things I've done.
You shared that calculator with me. It's beautiful.
It is. My assistant actually helped build it. And she worked with a consultant. And every time they came to me, I was like, no, I want this too. No, I want that too. And I the last time I was like, it's perfect. And they're like, oh, thank God. But it really is. It's awesome. And I can say each year, oh, by the way, this year I've saved, and I can tell them. So I can tell you right now, as of Q3, we have now hit the $2 million mark for 2024. Wow. And we're not even through the year.
That's incredible. And I feel like this is sort of, you are lighting your own fires, right? Like you are showing them the fires that didn't happen because you had a good system in place. And I feel like this comes up in litigation a lot too. I mean, you can really use e-discovery as a sword and a shield, and an entity that is well organized and can litigate efficiently is a much scarier entity to litigate against than one that is disorganized.
Exactly.
Where discovery can cripple them.
Right. And they'll bring me in and they'll say, I want everything. And I'll be like, actually, what you really want is this, this, this. And I can do a load file. I can do that. And they're like, okay, let us get back to you.
Yeah.
But by the way, I want it all as well. So be ready to deliver. Well, and it's a whole different world.
What you just said, I think, is an important call out for our listeners to really let sink in, because your calculation where you can show the value of how much money, and you just did it, at just the glance of your computer screen, you're able to say, hey, this year we saved XYZ amount of money. Being able to do that and answer that question with confidence and know exactly how that was calculated and being able to capture it at any moment's time is such a powerful resource. And I think a lot of people, including myself, struggled when I was in house. I struggled with how to calculate that and how to display that to, the owners of my business units so that I could prove up, this is what we've done. This is our value. This is why you want to invest further in us. And this is what we can do more if you give us more tools.
It's a very valuable tool to hand to your general counsel when he's going to bat for you. I don't feel like I should ever send him out there without the tools he needs. And I find that's the tool. You know, she needs a $100,000 increase on this tool. Are they really going to say no when you just bumped 2 million?
Right.
You know, it's not hard to understand. And it is not fair to throw him out there and not give him that information.
Yeah. That's amazing. So let's talk about the roadmap to success. So I know in talking to you that you've mentioned a couple of times that you really want to have a roadmap and kind of thinking ahead of time in increments, like maybe the next 5 to 7 years, and you want to have milestones along the way. What are some of those key milestones or goals that you have had in your initial plan when you set out to build your own InfoGov department and process?
So when we started, we had nothing. So, and what we had wasn't really what we should have had. So for us at that point, it was putting records stewards and coordinators in place, building some relationships, understanding at least the basics of the data you had, even dealing with indexing paper files, because we didn't even have that. When we started, we had 168,000 boxes with no index. I don't know how I'm supposed to know what to pull from if I have an e-discover. I have a discovery because no idea what's in them. So we spent really probably the first year or so just going through stuff and understanding stuff and building that roadmap. We are now down to 33,000 boxes. So and they're all indexed. So now we can go in and that side, we can put it aside and say, all right, let's focus on, and that was about years ago, but we said, now we can focus on the electronic side. And it was doing the same thing electronically. You know, we have a tool that now points to a file share and tells us what's in it. Well, now we can start documenting that. We can start looking at that. It goes to applications and it tells us about those. Oh, it has, they come to me the other day. It only has 1.5 billion rows. I'm like, oh, it's a small application, clearly. Why are you telling me this? I don't think I want this information. But it's understanding your data. So all of that to say, we now have a 7-year roadmap, and we've put every application that has PII on it, as well as all of our different initiatives so that we know what's coming next.
And so what are some milestones that you're looking to achieve on your roadmap?
Right now, my focus is data minimization and data reduction. So data reduction is the data is obsolete, it's duplicative, we don't need it, and let's get rid of it. get it out of here. Let's clean it out, blow it away. And then
all the rot.
All gone. All the rot's going. And create a destruction certificate. We just met with our IT group today to make sure that we're all following the same process, we're even building a web form. So if they want to delete data, they put all the information in the web form, I review it, I ask whatever questions I need, and I give approval. They then start deleting. And then after it's deleted, we get a destruction certificate. It's gone. And when they do destroy, they have to destroy everywhere. Let's not just destroy in one place. Make sure it's all gone. So they're working very hard at that. Their last hit was, I believe they told me, 40 terabytes of data. So 40 million documents.
Holy cow.
That's not bad for this week. What are you doing next week?
Linda, I have a serious question. How organized is your house?
Not anywhere near as organized as my work world.
I'm listening to you talk about...
No organized.
Okay, fair enough. I'm just listening to you talk about how organized your group is. And I'm like, oh my God, I bet your house is immaculate.
No.
Let's talk about the future. Because at the top of this episode, we discussed why InfoGov is so important in the here and now. But what do you think the future holds? And will InfoGov continue to be so critical? And if so, why?
Well, I don't think data is reducing as much as I'm trying. The world's data is not reducing. And I think that people are becoming more and more focused on the privacy side, on the dangerous, confidential information, sensitive information side. I think that it's only going to increase. I think that AI is going to play a serious role, understanding where information is real and information is made by AI, understanding whether a company created that data or they used an AI to just build a fictitious view of it, whether there's hallucinations, all of that kind of stuff is going to be critical. And the real marrying of information governance, data governance, privacy, and InfoSec, that connection in all companies is going to be critical for the company to be safe. It is not an easy job doing information security. It's not even a job I would even consider. Privacy is tough. There's always a new privacy reg. There's always a new privacy rule. And now the implementation of AI and all the AI governance that's out there in all the different ways, like it just keeps coming. So do I think we'll be less busy next year? No, I don't. Do I think we'll have less to do? No, I don't. I think it'll be different. I think it's going to continue to change, but I don't see it decreasing.
So Angie asked you about the future, but I'm curious about the past because I know for me personally, a lot of the biggest lessons I've learned have been because of mistakes that I've made. And so I'm curious if there's any mistake that you feel like you've made or that your team, you know, has overcome that you feel like that was the best learning experience. I hate that we had to learn it that way, but I'm really glad that we worked through that obstacle because it came out to our advantage. Would you share any moment like that that you feel like you've had?
Sure. The first discovery I had started with about 2,000 boxes. We were looking for a needle in a haystack. They didn't know if it was going to be electronic or paper. We had nothing in place. I had just started. I remember walking into the room and there were just boxes to the ceiling. And I thought, okay, this will never happen to me again. Either I will pick a new career or I will fix this mess, but this will never happen to me again. And that was what really spurred me on. That's when I decided, no, we have to do better than this. We can do better than this. And we did.
That's great. So I know we're going to be wrapping up here and appreciate your time, but I'm curious, what three key takeaways do you think from today's episode that our listeners would do well to remember if they plan to build an InfoGov system or improve one that's already in place at their organization?
I would say number one, the more you know about your data, the better positioned and defensible you are. Listen to your data. It's talking to you. I'd say, secondly, don't skimp on your team. Hire a strong team, hire a team that's willing to learn and that has the same passion you have. If they seem like they're more enthusiastic than you, hire them. It's perfectly fine. You'll catch up. And then third, I would say really showcase your wins. Give your sponsor something to work with when he's supporting you or she's supporting you. It's critical because that's an uphill battle. It's not like you're going to be able to show all of this extra business growth. You're just going to show something that you're taking away. So give them something to work with.
Wow, that's awesome advice.
Yeah, Linda, we're wrapping up here, but I just want to say thank you so much for your time today. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you, hearing all of your wisdom and your stories and your suggestions. It's just been wonderful. We are forever grateful for you coming on our little podcast.
Thank you.
So Linda, I will second that, what Angie just said. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Thank you for your enthusiasm and your persistence in this industry. It's been a pleasure to get to work with you on so many different levels now, and I hope that that continues in the future. And I'm just super proud of you and your team, and think that you guys are a great partner, and I appreciate you sharing with our listeners. So thank you, and happy Halloween to you.
Thank you, and same to you. Thank you both.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Please give us a 5-star review and tell all of your friends, family, and coworkers about us. And of course, please hit us up on LinkedIn or on our website, which is ediscoverychicks.com, with any thoughts, questions, or drink recommendations. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.